Council for Florida Carry. I really want to thank all of you who came from out of state. I know y'all were probably very worried by the Brady campaign's warning of our liberal stand-your-ground law and our shoot-first, ask-questions-later laws. I'm sure that had all y'all in fear about coming here today, but thank you anyway. Stand Your Ground was passed here in Florida in 2005. It has three main components: the right to meet force with force, getting rid of the duty to retreat and turn your back on an attacker, and an immunity from arrest and prosecution if you have to act in self-defense. Florida was one of the first states to pass this law and to codify it in our statutes. Since then, that legislation has been used as model legislation in a lot of the other states. To date, there are approximately 31 states that have some form of Stand Your Ground. It was not passed as a partisan law, despite a lot of the claims that this was something pushed by the NRA and a bunch of Republicans. It was passed by the Florida Senate by a 39-0 vote. It was passed in the House by a 92-20 vote. Only 12 Democrats voted against it. The rest of them voted in favor. It's in the states it's been passed in, it's been signed by Democratic governor after Democratic governor with no veto. So the claim that this is somehow a law that is only for conservatives is just not true. We had the standard predictions when it was passed. We were going to have blood in the streets. We were going to have the Wild West. We were going to have vigilantes, and every argument and traffic accident was going to become a shooting. I'm sure y'all have all heard the news reports of all those things that didn't come true. Since we passed the law in 2005, we've had a total of 34 appellate decisions on Stand Your Ground. That is our state DCAs and our Supreme Court. 34 decisions from 2005 to 2012. Despite the claim that we've had a tripling of self-defense claims in Florida, we've only had 34 appellate cases. I think that ought to say a lot about the media's numbers and how big a problem this has been. Unfortunately, we had a situation here back in February, a few miles up the road, where somebody has claimed they've acted in self-defense, and it has become a national issue. All of a sudden, Stand Your Ground is known far and wide outside of the gun community where it wasn't before. Unfortunately, most of the reporting on it has been short on facts and long on hyperbole. The fact is, the law is working. It's protecting people who act in self-defense from arrest until after an investigation has occurred, and it's preventing the prosecution and lawsuits against people who have to act in self-defense. According to John Lott, the Stand Your Ground laws have resulted in reduced murder rates of 9% and violent crime rates of 11% lower, just because the state has passed Stand Your Ground. In response to the Zimmerman case, though, that because of the mass call for modification of the Stand Your Ground law, the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, appointed a 19-member committee to hold hearings around the state. That committee is still meeting. The next meeting is coming up in Jacksonville in October. Unfortunately, some of the members on that committee are well-known anti-gun people. One is Sheriff Jerry Demings, the sheriff of Orange County. Another is Chief David Perry of the FSU Police Department. I found it interesting that the governor allowed the chief of FSU Police Department to be on this committee, considering that there is no such thing as a lawful use of firearms on his campus, because he's managed to oppose and fight every time campus carry has been brought up in Florida. Most of the debate before the committee has focused on the Stand Your Ground portion, having part of Stand Your Ground that has to do with the right not to retreat. Very little of it is focused on the right to immunity, the right to be free from arrest and prosecution. I think that's because most people realize that the question that they're trying to address is, when is the right time to use self-defense? When should self-defense be allowed? When is it okay to take a life? There doesn't seem to be a lot of challenge or a lot of question to the granting of immunity under Stand Your Ground. And so I don't think that we're going to see a lot of bills necessarily addressing that in the upcoming legislative session, but I do expect to see a lot of bills that try and weaken the right not to retreat, a lot of bills that try to weaken the ability of a person to stand their ground and meet force with force. One of the main complaints that we've had over the past 6 months in Florida is the what some people say is an inconsistent application of stand your ground. One of the landmark cases that they're trying, or one of the big cases they're trying to point to, is a case up in Jacksonville of a young lady named Marissa Alexander, who claimed that she fired a warning shot in self-defense to stop spousal abuse. Interestingly, the state attorney in that case is the same state attorney that was appointed for the Zimmerman case. Ms. Alexander's case, she was convicted, and because of our mandatory minimum laws in Florida, she was sentenced to a mandatory minimum of 15 years. The judge did make some comments indicating that he didn't necessarily think that that was an appropriate sentence in this case, but unfortunately, in the interest of law and order, we've passed a lot of mandatory minimum laws in Florida that result in unintended consequences for people who act in self-defense. In Florida currently, if you act in self-defense and you're wrong, and you just display the firearm, it's a 3-year mandatory minimum. If you happen to be using a .22 that has more than 20 rounds, it is a 20-year mandatory minimum because of our enhancements. That's one of the goals that Florida Carry intends to work on in the upcoming legislative sessions, to try and address some of these problems that have unintended consequences that result in harm to persons who act in self-defense. The other problem we have currently is our judiciary. Our judiciary has a poor understanding of stand your ground laws. I recently had a judge tell me in one of my cases that he saw this as a self-defense case, but not a stand your ground case. I'm not sure exactly what he meant by that, because according to Florida law, anytime a person claims to act in self-defense, they have a right to claim stand your ground immunity. So what the judge meant by that, I'm not sure. The other problem is the way the judges are interpreting the law is resulting in a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. Justice Holmes said years ago in a Supreme Court case dealing with a self-defense and a knife attack, that detached reflection cannot be demanded at the presence of an uplifted knife. But that's what we have in Florida currently. That's the way the judges are applying the law. They want to analyze stand your ground self-defense cases on the basis of what does the calm and detached person looking at this 6 months later, what do they think this person should have done? Not what had to happen in that moment, not the immediacy of the decision that had to be made. There's some fixes that we need to our stand your ground law too. Number one is we need to give effect to our immunity statute. We need to have language that awards attorney's fees to persons who have to defend themselves in court from overzealous prosecutors and overzealous sheriff's departments and police departments. The other thing we need is language granting a time for reflection. I don't know if you're aware, but most of the time when a police officer has to act in self-defense in the line of duty, that their police contracts give them between 48 and 72 hours before they have to answer any questions. That didn't happen in Zimmerman, and it doesn't happen in any other self-defense case in Florida that I'm aware of. That person's asked to answer questions immediately, and unless they invoke their right to counsel, they're going to be asked answering questions that may come back to haunt them. The other main legislative fix that we need is we need full appellate review for these cases. Currently, you have a limited right to appeal a denial of stand your ground immunity. Again, not something that's granted to police officers or law enforcement when they have to act in self-defense. If they're sued after the fact, they have a right to a full appeal, a full hearing of their case before they can be tried. We do not have that right in Florida, and we need it. I ask for each of you to stay involved with your state organizations, pay attention to what's going on with Stand Your Ground Immunity, because you can count on it. Florida cases are going to be used in your states this upcoming legislative session to challenge your stand your ground laws too. And it's going to take the communication of all of us and contact between all of us to make sure that these stand your ground laws aren't weakened. Thank you.
Well, that took care of most of my speech. I get I'm John Guttmacher. I'm a criminal trial attorney. I'm also an NRA certified firearms instructor. I refuse to be a victim instructor. I've been a police legal advisor to a narcotic strike field in the field. And I try cases. Well, I try not to try cases, actually, because trying cases is a last resort when you get to mandatory minimum sentences. I do a lot of things in this particular area. And I also have a book that sold right now. We sold 189,000 copies of Florida Firearms Law, Use, and Ownership. Thank you. Stand Your Ground is nothing new. I mean, it's been around for a long, long time. It's been around in English common law, although it's gone through different forms. And if you know your law, you know that the common law says that you always have a right to stand your ground on the use of non-deadly force. That's the way it's always been. That's the way it's always been in Florida. But it's more recent. I'm going to move Fox News's microphone because it keeps attacking me here. So I'm stand my ground, absolutely. But one of the cases that was alluded to by the previous speaker is the case of Brown versus United States. It's a United States Supreme Court case of it's a United States Supreme Court case of 1921. And it refers back to another United States Supreme Court of 1895. Both of those cases make it very clear that in the federal court system since 1895, stand your ground has been the rule for the use of deadly force. Okay? So it's not anything new. And that's something that seems to have been lost when the Stand Your Ground law was passed here in 2005. It's new. Well, it's not new. It's been around for a long time, and it's been in the federal courts for even longer. Now, basically, you know, you ask yourself, why did we go to Stand Your Ground? And as a trial lawyer and as an instructor, I can tell you something that you all know, and that is that if you're facing an assailant who has a gun or a knife or a weapon or has a superior physique to you, trying to escape usually just exposes you to more danger. You can't outrun a bullet. You can't outrun a stab to your back. You can't outrun somebody clubbing you in the back of the head. And when you do that, just as Justice Holmes said in this case, you expose yourself to more danger. And if you try, and if it's a forcible felony that is about to happen and you don't stand your ground, then we all know the forcible felony is going to occur. So stand your ground from a standpoint of deadly force came about as a necessity. It also came about because lots and lots of cases went to juries because armchair generals were saying, well, maybe you could have retreated. Well, I'm going to tell you that as an instructor, when the heat of the moment is there, when your blood is pumping, when you have that tunnel vision, and the only question in your mind is whether you're going to survive or not, analysis is not something that you usually go through. And the more you analyze, the more chance you have of becoming a victim, okay? Because it gives the other person the advantage. It gives them the advantage of time. It gives the advantage of you're not reacting before they can react to you. Now, we've got some problems in the Stand Your Ground law, and I have to tell you, Stand Your Ground is just a part of this law. I mean, it's an immunity law. It covers all situations. There are an awful lot of situations that can happen. I mean, a kidnapping can be happening that you witness and you have nothing to do with. Do you want to intercede? If you do, you fall under the Stand Your Ground law. if you're George Zimmerman and it happened the way George said, and you're on the ground and somebody is pounding your head into the concrete, it's not stand your ground because there's nowhere to go. Okay? It's another facet of the law, because the law is an immunity law. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the Florida courts screwed up this law right from the very start, because immunity to me means castigar. And if any of you are lawyers, you know that castigar means that the state has the burden of proving that you did not use immunity. In Florida, you have the burden of proving that it was immunity. And that's a really requiring you to put in negative proof. It's a hard thing to do. And it, to me, emasculates the entire immunity statute. I personally feel that the Florida courts got that dead wrong. There are a lot of other things that the Florida courts have gotten dead wrong. Judges don't understand self-defense. They really don't. They don't understand guns. They don't understand ballistics. These are things they're not usually used to. I tried a case about a year ago here. It was a knife case, and it was a question whether it was a common pocket knife or not. And it emphasized to me how amazingly juries and other people have no clue of what's going on. Because I asked all the jurors on the jury pool, how many people here own a pocket knife? And I figured, okay, almost everybody is going to raise their hand. Nobody raised their hand. I said, how many of you have ever owned a pocket knife or know somebody who owns a pocket knife? Guess what? Nobody raised their hand. Yeah, that's amazing. The judge knew nothing about common pocket knives because she didn't have one either. And that's pretty common in the state of Florida, that there's a lack of education, and that goes to the attorneys. I mean, I think that when I face a prosecutor in a case, I'm always waiting for that, well, it was a hollow point bullet. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was a hollow point bullet. That's what we've been using for the last 30 years in self-defense. We don't use anything else. Everything else is used for target shooting. But they don't know it. The judges don't know it. And unless you are up with things, and you're a juror who's up with all this stuff, they don't know it either. So it's a hill that you have to climb, or a mountain that you have to climb all the time. The Stand Your Ground Task Force did point out two things that seem to be a problem in the law right now as far as what the hell does it mean. And there are a lot of questions because the Florida appellate courts keep screwing it up. If you are from Florida, take a look at State versus Hill, which is a Fourth District case in August of this year. Boy, talk about a court that doesn't understand what the hell it's all about. The Fourth District is right there. Third District is ahead of them, but the Fourth District is right there. They know nothing. The Stand Your Ground Task Force said, okay, we're looking at this statute, and it says in one section, which is 776.013, that if you are acting in any way unlawful, if you're engaged in unlawful activity in any way, that the immunity doesn't apply to you. And I don't understand that, but the Stand Your Ground Commission's task force said, well, does this mean everything? Does it mean a zoning violation? Does it mean I'm speeding unlawfully? Does it mean I'm just passively smoking marijuana? And or by unlawful activity, was the legislature referring to the fact that the defender was not an aggressor, or was not a person who, because of their unlawful activity, had provoked the defendant to act in a response to the unlawful conduct? Because unless there's a connection, it shouldn't matter. And you should know that an aggressor under the law today, here in Florida and most states, is that unless you're acting unlawfully in the situation, you are not the aggressor. Okay? If I want to call you every name in the book, and you strike me because of that, or take physical action against me because of that, you're the aggressor. I'm not the aggressor. I may have caused it, but under the law, I have freedom of speech, and I can say any damn thing I please. And I usually do. So these are some of the issues. Is my time getting close or I'm over? I'm over. Well, in that case, I'm over.
I'm very sorry about that. We're running behind, but Mr. Guttmacher will be here for a while. So if you want to speak with him, you can catch him.